Hey everyone, welcome to the Face Rocker podcast number 83. This week we're coming at you live from the YouTube gaming stage at E3. Big thanks to our friends at Rooster Teeth for setting us up. We're joined by Bernie and Adam Kovic of Funhouse fame to talk video games. Me and my brother Jimmy reminisce about games, what's coming out this year, what was announced, and a little bit on E3s of years past and how we used to sneak in all the time. It's a lot of fun. Real quick, for those of you who are fans of the Face Rocker podcast, I assume you are if you've managed to stick around and listen to this for this long. Our buddies over at Midroll are running a little bit of a survey, and what the survey does is it helps advertisers and people who support the podcast and keep the podcast free for you guys to know a little bit more about you so that, you know, what we're talking about is relevant to you. So if you head on over to podsurvey.com/facerocker, that's podsurvey.com/facerocker, and fill out the quick survey on there. You help us out. You help us out in terms of us getting to know you a little bit better, and you enter yourself into a little drawing every month for a $100 Amazon gift card. And as far as I can tell, Amazon sells everything, so that might as well just be $100 free cash in your pocket to just buy anything. Anyway, head over to podsurvey.com/facerocker, fill out the survey, help out the podcast. We really do appreciate it, and enter yourself into a drawing for a free Amazon gift card. Anyway, enough yammering. Let's see what it was like on the stage at E3 this year. So, Jimmy, really quick, I just, you're here with a lot of pins on you,
man.
I noticed,
check out my
which is really
pins.
Not fair.
Pins you have, with Z's.
What do you have here? Yeah,
this is, so it's the 30th anniversary of Mario. Sweet. There you go. It's the 30th anniversary of Mario. Little known fact, Freddie Wong has the exact same birthday to the date and year of Mario himself. So this is also your 30th birthday party.
Which technically makes Mario a 29-year-old Asian-American plumber, right? Technically?
I mean, the similarities are striking. Yeah.
And is that a Star Fox one?
Yes, it's Star Fox. I got to play Star Fox. It's sweet. I'm super excited. I'm very stoked.
I've only seen the trailer for it, so it is actually playable here. It's coming out this year, right?
Yeah. I think it's holiday this season. It's great because it took a little to get used to, but they're using the gamepad specifically as something that you can use to aim while you're flying with the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's what I would say it's similar to using a mouse in an FPS compared to a joystick, because there's a lot more control and you can actually aim quickly at different areas. So it's a lot more intuitive.
It surprises me. It's taken about, 15 years since Star Fox 64, which was the best I think Star Fox ever was. Why didn't they just do that but add stuff? For some reason, they had dinosaurs at one point on the GameCube version, and you had staff.
Yeah, you could run around as Fox.
Why is this hard for you? You did it right the first time. You have more powerful hardware. Just do it again, but make it look clean.
Yeah. Miyamoto was, that's what he was super stoked about, to get back to it. And I don't know. There haven't been that many games that have used the gamepad well. I think this is one of the highlights of the gamepad, being able to aim with it.
There was that one that launched, was it Zombie U or something?
Yeah, Zombie U
did it.
Yeah.
And it's funnily enough, by the way, speaking of games that are being done again with slightly better graphics, here we are in the year 2015, and we got what? Final Fantasy coming out again?
Oh, yeah, Remake City, baby.
The funny thing about that, dude, is I guarantee you at Square Enix, they have a glass box that is the Final Fantasy VII remake as break in case of emergency.
Right.
Because it's like, guys, this is it. Guaranteed free money. So we need this boost. Our shareholders are demanding.
They're like, guys, we have nothing this year. And they're like, break the box.
I like that idea because I've heard that joke before, but then I thought about it, the funnier it got. Because I like the idea that they developed it in 2004.
Oh, yeah.
And then now it's 2015. They're like, break it. And it looks like crap because it's on PS2. And they're like, oh, it's garbage.
And they do it again. It up again. Yeah. And then also we have Doom coming out.
And it is everything that's old is new again.
This feels like E3 if it was 1993, and we just walked into a time machine.
So for those Final Fantasy VII for the first time.
So for those of you at home, E3 has been an industry-only event this year. Is the first year I noticed that they actually got rid of the loophole that my friends and I have been using for almost 6 years
now.
Which
makes it okay to talk about now.
Which is not okay to talk about. But we used to sneak into E3
And this is how we did it. And I don't know, have you ever snuck into E3?
My very first E3, I had a hookup, but I did sneak in technically.
How did you do it?
So I'm from LA.
Yeah.
And I'm from the suburbs, Santa Clarita, where Magic Mountain is. So it's about 30 miles, north of here. My friend's dad was the electrician, and he did all the lighting for the event.
Oh.
And so me and my friend Danny ditched high school that day and snuck in.
Hey.
We're joined now by
Bernie. He's here to tell us that we can't talk about our trade secrets and how we snuck in.
We can talk about it.
I'm just kidding.
It's fun to ask questions of people who every other answer is, I'm sorry, I just can't answer that.
I'll tell you whatever you want to hear.
Listen, if you guys are tuning in this feed expecting some commentary about all the games that have come out, I hate to woefully disappoint you, but we're 3 days in. You've got plenty of that all over the place. Relax. Is not what you're getting. What you're going to get is how to sneak into E3 or how we used to sneak into
E3. Dude, everybody's first trip to E3 was with a fake badge.
Absolutely.
We were telling those stories before. Ashley made up a website, like for a gaming criticism site, and totally faked the whole thing. She made an entire, like, 8 pages of a fake website just in case they checked it out.
What was the name?
What was the name of your fake website that you made?
You could just say two words, one of which has to be the word game.
Oh, yeah,
game,
yeah.
Like, Game Blast.
Game Blast.
Yeah.
Oh, gameblast.edu. That's us. We're educational. We do edutainment titles. That's also I need so three passes for also, me and my 14-year-old friends.
That's also so you can get an Amazon Prime membership for free.
Well, so here's how we used to do it.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say Ashley totally remembers, but she's not saying. It was an American McGee fan site is what it was.
One of many.
No, don't get mad. Now she's wagging her finger at me. I'm
so sorry. So this is what we used to do. And this would give you a legitimate, actual, proper pass.
Really?
That would scan. It would work under the black lights and everything. And here's how you would do it. You needed one friend who worked at a major publisher. So EA, Activision, any publisher that would send 2,000 people to E3.
Right.
That one friend gets in line with you. You go to the front when they pick up their badge, and you go to them and you say, he goes up and he says, okay, hey, I'm Joe, okay, da-da-da. They look it up, they print it out. Then the person working the booth goes to you, and you say, hi, I'm Freddie Wong, W-O-N-G. And they're going to look, and it's not going to be in there. And then you're like, sorry, is it I-E? It might be under Y. Did you send the email to Lori?
Yeah, I forwarded the documents 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember we were in the break room, and you said that. Yeah.
And then the person working the counter looks behind you and sees there's a line of people, and they see that Activision has 2,000 people who are going, and they say, fine, clearly you must be part of Activision. And that's how we got a badge without having to do anything for it, year in and year out. Like,
wow, that's super
way
legit.
Back. That was the way to do it.
Wow. Freddie knows all these tricks. Freddie once told me because he worked for his university. He worked in, like, support for shows.
Yeah, we did audio stuff, yeah.
And so Freddie said if you ever want to get backstage anywhere, just wear a black polo and carry an XLR cable coiled up going, run up to security and go, I need to get this backstage. I got the thing in there. And he goes, okay, just go, go, go.
Oh, yeah. The moment they got a black polo shirt, it's a universal sign of audio professional. And then they're like, don't mess with the guys with the black polo.
Living in LA, you learn so many things. But, like, I've always thought homeless people are doing it wrong. Because if you really want free food, go to a movie set, which there are many in downtown LA or anywhere.
Right.
Get a little utility belt, just some shorts, some boots, a hat, and I don't give a fuck attitude. And just walk up to the catering truck. It won't second guess you.
It's actually funny that you mention it because there was, in the film world around downtown, there was a guy who was nicknamed Knife Guy.
He had a
shopping cart full of knives.
And
every grip knows this guy who's ever worked downtown because he would go up to these guys and be like, hey, you want to buy a knife? And he would sell them knives. And this is a big deal. He tragically died earlier this year. Every grip I've talked to has a Knife Guy story.
Really?
We're like, dude, it's so bad that Knife Guy died.
And that's how he got on set because everyone wants, like, yeah, I do need a knife to cut this or whatever.
He would just sell knives. Like, we'll go around the circle and everyone pull out their Knife Guy knife. And they had one.
Because they bought one from him.
It was like $2. It's a good knife.
It's like a friendly mugging, it sounds like.
Exactly.
I like that the Capcom booth is within earshot. That's going to be a villain now in the next Dead Rising game.
Nice guy. Yeah.
Guy with a shopping cart filled with knives. Yeah.
He sounds like a nice guy, though.
It was.
That guy sounds nice.
And it's funny too, because E3 also every year it's like different in terms of how good it is, right?
Yeah.
And the years right before PS4 and Xbox One, before the console refresh, were some of the worst E3s.
Yeah, and the year of the launch too, when it's like not all about the consoles anymore, and then it's like, okay, now what are we going to talk about? Because the launch titles typically are not that great either.
It was 2012 or 2013, one of those where it was hands down like the worst thing ever.
Oh man!
Because every new thing was announced. And they didn't actually have the box for the Xbox One or the PS4 yet.
Yeah.
It was always just circuit boards, and they're like, you want to see Arkham Origins again? It's like, not really, I guess. Yeah, that was, it's finally good. This is the best it's been in a very long
time. I've talked to a lot of people who said this is their first E3. I'm like, you're coming in on top.
Yeah.
Because there's been some pretty lean E3s in the past.
It's also the most broadcasted E3 by far.
Well, it gets me to the point where it's like, it's really a better experience sitting around at home watching it in a weird way, because you can just kind of hop around to the press conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, so for you folks watching at home, you guys really got the cream of the crop right now. Like, it's way easy. Well, maybe not, but it's way easier. It's way less line standing and walking and everything. And it's just, you have to time your bathroom breaks, man.
Yeah, I mean,
you have to do that at home.
If you're a convention fan and you love the experience of being around and surrounded by it, then it's great. But
if you love the pageantry that were built in 3 days and will be torn down in two.
Yeah, everything we're sitting on is gone in 5 hours.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it takes 3 weeks to build this thing up. It's about 4 hours to tear it down.
Yeah.
It'll be gone. It's supposed to be totally empty.
I saw a great tweet from a developer who said every single person working on a game right now has this line of code, and it was a comment line, and it was, E3 hack, get rid of and fix in future version. Because everybody's, trying to get stuff out for the
demos and stuff. Between the four of us, I could probably count on one hand all the games we have played since being here.
Yep.
Oh, that's the other part. People are like, I wish I was E3 so I could play the games. Like, you will wait in line. Probably you'll have enough time for one game a day.
Yeah, per
if
day.
You're lucky.
Or if you're going to come day three.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's
easier. See, here's the thing, though. Everyone figured that out. Because I heard that Battlefront, which was a huge deal, the shortest lines were the first 2 days. Because this day, everyone had made that calculation. They're like, all right, I'm going to come day three. No. The lines right now are like way long compared to earlier.
It's like my jerk friend who said Magic Mountain's empty on Super Bowl day, and then I went there and the lines were longer than I'd ever seen.
Your jerk friend is the jerk friend to a lot of people and told them that secret.
Yeah, he just goes in the day after the Super Bowl and is like, yes, got him.
We'll get home from this and there'll be something I'll hear about. I'll be like, what? They were playing Left 4 Dead 3, around the corner or something I won't have heard about even though I'm here all 3 days.
Yeah,
right. I mean, we had to get here at 8 this morning just to play Halo 5.
Was it worth it?
Not just to play Halo 5, which was tremendous, but we got to see the HoloLens demo for Halo 5.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Freddie, you should go down there and try to do whatever you can to get in there.
I have a black polo in the trunk of my car.
Now you can need like some kind of fiber optic cable, whatever
use
for holograms, you'll need that.
So, because my feeling is that AR is going to hit first, because I think it's a little more accessible, it's a little easier for people to get. How was it?
It was great. I mean, it was like, it was so far, the visual fidelity of it was so far advanced from what I would expect from a first experience.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and it's like, the way they designed it too is great. And I got to point out, Freddie does really amazing stuff, produces content for the web, and everybody knows him for his visual effects. But behind the scenes, what he does technically is really progressive and pushes the limits as well. For Video Game High School, I remember you were working hard to get your player to do 60 frames per second for some of your shots.
Yeah.
And video players just weren't doing that at the time.
No, and it was funny because you would start to look at like just the raw computing power that you needed just to play back, even at 48 frames a second. And it was like a real challenge. And a lot of people were like, hey, it turns out you need a pretty beefy rig even to just get that. And, it turns out... not a lot of people have super beefy rigs, but it's interesting to kind of push that. And the funny thing about on the HoloLens side of things, because to me, it doesn't count until I can wear it and just do Minority Report style gestures in front of me, and everything shows up perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you get that voice recognition where it's just like, all right, give me 20 pictures of trees, spread it out, split by bark, and just really say that and have it work,
only.
That'd be it.
It's not there yet because there was no interaction other than, it was a little bit like I said, it's the, I think we're still 10 years too early before it's to that point where we're wearing glasses about the size you guys are wearing right now. Because Bernie was giving me crap for this, but I don't think I had the neck strength for it because it's very front heavy.
He came out, he's like this. He's like, ah.
Yeah, I was like, they give you an eye test before they even give it to you, and so they write they write your number down.
Measure your interpupillary distance.
Oh, so they could, to calibrate it.
So it's already
69, by the way. So
nice.
Yeah, not to give out personal information about myself. But it's like, so there's gonna be like your new social security.
I don't know if having the higher number makes you the winner. I didn't know. I was like,
it does.
Okay. It's just the distance, right? Between your two, between your.
The bigger the distance, the bigger the brain. You know, it all correlates.
Yeah. But it's basically like you have a visor view.
Yeah.
And then you have a field in which, you know, there's the, that's what it affects. That's what a hologram is. And the way they designed it was so smart because as people, a lot of people have played Halo, the first experience you have is you put it on and they said, go down that hallway. And then when they say that, you have an arrow all of a sudden on the side of your screen. And when you turn, it becomes a waypoint. So you navigate the hallway following the waypoint, counts down as you go towards it.
Please tell me that the first thing you have to do is crouch under something and then jump over something.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to learn
We got to celebrate it. Here, jump over this waist-high object. Oh, something fell. I guess you're going to learn how to crouch now.
Look up at this light.
Yeah, look up at this light. When do you think we're going to be away from that in video games?
Well, that's the way they hit the inversion thing where you have to pick it. But at this point, I mean, people know if they're inverted or not.
No, but every first-person shooter starts with you crouching and jumping over something.
You just need to run some calibration tests.
Right.
No, it's like at some point.
And keep your arms by your
side.
We
had the guy from XCOM on today. He worked. He's been at XCOM so long at Firaxis. He worked for MicroProse back when it was that company. And we were talking about the original XCOM, original back in 90. Yeah. And he goes, you can't go back and play it because it didn't, like, teach you how to play the game in the game.
Yeah.
They assumed you would know how to do it or you would read the manual.
Yeah, and but, well, to a lesser extent, you have that now because I think Minecraft and like DayZ and those games, which are have such a heavy Wikipedia requirement almost, like a wiki requirement, just to even like get a sense of what's going on and where to go. Like, I feel like there's an entire generation of kids who are growing up with games who are kind of used to getting the information of how to play it from other places.
Right.
Or calling a hotline and paying a lot of money.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever call the Nintendo hit hotline?
No, I couldn't afford that. Call the porn.
I did it once.
I'm going to date myself here. I'm so old, I would have those hint books where you had a marker that would, like, invisible ink, and it would reveal what the thing was. That's what I did. I mean, I wasn't like Little Orphan Annie with a decoder ring, but it was like a step up from that.
Under the right light.
I used that to get to the Zork. I don't know what that tell you.
And let me real quick, just I want to keep talking about E3 and sort of the games that are coming up. One of the games that came out that's coming out this holiday season is you have another Guitar Hero, which I personally have a little bit of history with because I spent a few years in college. Yeah, I was a couple of years in college as a professional Guitar Hero player. I went to Canada to do an event there.
Toronto.
I went to Edmonton. The best part about this was in order to get into Edmonton, I was getting paid. So I needed to get a work permit from the Canadian government. And in order to do that, there's a bit of a process, and you need to qualify. You know, for example, you know, the Canadian government needs to make sure that, you know, you're not taking a job away from a Canadian citizen. So they needed
there's that one guy like, they're taking a job. So that was a horrible Canadian.
I have full Canadian work visa documentation that lists my occupation as professional Guitar Hero player. When I got off the plane in Edmonton, the guy at the booth was like, okay, oh, yeah, work permit line here. Goes, and he's like, oh, yeah. It says you're a professional Guitar Hero player, yeah? I was like, yeah. He's like, so, like, you're, like, really good at this? I'm like, yeah, I'm getting paid. He's like, wicked, man. And then he just,
almost,
like, let me into the country.
Almost. Yeah. Yes.
I have to admit that for that Halo HoloLens thing, it was such a great suspension of disbelief. I'm watching a small Commander Palmer give me my mission, and I'm, like, just enthralled. And it looked amazing. Solid. It looked solid as a rock in front of me. Then they showed the map. And here's where you don't commit this to memory. And that was cool because when we played the game, for the first time ever, first time playing a map, I knew where I was at all times because of that awesome
interesting. Cool.
Immersive
in there.
Briefing. But it's that experience of like, when you first play as Chief and they teach you how to play the game. And you're in the lab and everybody's dressed up in Spartans. They have this huge set and you go through this whole holographic display and I'm like, they're like, now you're going to go to battle. I'm like, yeah, I'm a Spartan. And I take my thing off and I see Gavin there. And he's like, do I go this way? Where do I go? it immediately robbed it. Took it all away from me. But it was amazing. I can't wait to see what people do with HoloLens. It's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Minority Report app, instant $1 million idea, another free one for everyone listening out there. Get that going.
Yeah, just do it.
Everyone do it. It'd be like, you've seen like Hacker Typer?
Yeah.
It's a website where you just like do gibberish and gives you the code. Exact same concept, but for Minority Report and the HoloLens.
My fear is the Kinect.
Why is that?
We were promised the future. And then we got this thing that bugs out every time I wave my hand in front of it. And so they're like, it's AR. And then it's like, I'm afraid it's just like, it's just not going to work. It's like, so, like, I think Microsoft has the concept, the overall execution.
Well, they, you know, they
always
do,
falls a little short.
Well, see, they do say that the Kinect and the tech underlying the Kinect is what's going. It's like that's the that was the research phase essentially
yeah.
for a lot of the stuff that they're doing there in terms of.
Are they saying
tracking.
That we were the guinea pigs then?
Oh, yeah. Totally. We this generation of humans are like the perpetual beta testers
for the next group of kids.
Our grandchildren yes. are going to have a great time.
Well, come on. I mean, welcome to the world of gaming. If you came, if you saw anything here 10 years ago, anything in your line of sight, it would have been the best thing ever.
Yeah.
There's a cinematic they play on this booth over here at Curse that would have been the greatest animated short film 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, and let's not forget, by the way, the past of E3 where there was some pretty insane stuff that used to go on here. I remember. Do you guys remember the Call of Duty controversy way back? It was like 2003, where to promote the next Call of Duty, they had hired a bunch of Nazi lookalike soldiers to stand around in uniform. And was like, guys, this is whose idea was this? So we've definitely come a long way from the from questionable booth tactics to now just everything just HD
Were those
screens.
The dark times?
There
dark
were some
times.
Weird stuff. I used to have, you know, I used to work at 20th Century Fox doing video game stuff. So my first experience with E3 was from the perspective of one of the developers here. And it's like an awfully boring conference because it's just meetings. It's just you going around to all the developers saying, here's our slate for this year, as planning out. That was originally kind of what it was all about and what the sort of goal was. Yeah. And originally there was just talking to my boss who had been to E3 longer, he's like, the stories of raw nerd debauchery that happened around here in terms of just drug use and just all kinds of crazy stuff. That's what E3 used to be. It's like, yeah, man, E3's tame now.
Well, tame?
You have a large group of people who are not used to really drinking in social settings. You go, what's that? Oh, that's an open bar. You're like, that's a disaster just waiting to happen.
Wait, they're like, what do you mean open? Like open for business?
Like, it's behind the giant tank.
Oh, yeah.
Freddie, weren't you telling me a story about somebody that was going to be purchased? Was it Atari or something?
Yeah, like this, you look back at the old school world of video games, like even like the story of Tetris, which is an incredible story because it was developed in the Soviet Union.
Yep.
And Nintendo, and I believe it was Intellivision, or what, you know, was they saw this game, like, this is the game that we need to grab.
Yeah.
Intellivision was in the meeting with the guys who developed Tetris, and they're about to sign a contract. Nintendo, through corporate espionage, found out where the meeting was taking place, busted in the door before they signed, had another contract, threw their contract on the table, threw it in front of them, like, this is more money, sign this with us now. And they was like, okay. And they did, and that's why Nintendo is where it is, and that's why you don't know about Intellivision. It's like, that's the level of stuff. Atari was being bought by Warner Brothers for something like $30 million, something like that. The executives came in.
It sounds like the cause of the Cold War over here.
Or the end.
To sign the paperwork. It's just, they look inside, it's just nothing but kids smoking weed and programming. That was like all Atari was, all underage kids programming. They're like, what is this? They go in the back, there's the entire upper management is just like in hot tubs doing cocaine. They're like, oh gosh, oh, today was the meeting where you guys were coming to get us. Oh, hey, come on in, guys. They're just like, sign this paper, get out of here.
I think since then, I don't know, because I think of things like, you know, John Romero make you his bitch. Sort of.
Yeah, days. Yeah, like Daikatana and stuff.
With the advent of the internet and everything, and just so many things being open and like that, I think the industry itself has buttoned itself up a bit.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, you don't get the crazy weird stories. You know, if you read like Masters of Doom, which is a great book chronicling id and that whole their whole sort of, you know, and where Romero went and Carmack and everything, like you look at that game industry back then, and it's very very different than the game industry you have today.
You know, it's another great book for reading about the early history of video game industry is it's actually a book about a guy who talks about his life living with autism and never being diagnosed. It's called Look Me in the Eye. But, you know, as somebody who is like high functioning autistic, he ended up in the games industry early on. Like, worked on a lot of stuff. Like, he worked on, remember the game Dark Tower?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was in charge of getting to stop in the right place and like things like that.
And, you know, that's just funny that you mentioned some early stuff, because what was fascinating is I saw one of my friends who's a director of photography did some interviews with Nintendo, and he got to see some of the original design docs for the first Super Mario.
Oh,
and what it was just graph paper, and they drew out everything onto like just long strips of graph paper, and that's how they designed the levels. They would give it to a programmer who would then code that up, and then they would play it, and they'd be like, okay, we need to change this. But it would all go back to, we need to draw the level, which is like not that different than like what you used to do.
Did you see Mario Maker?
Well, it's like it's not that different.
I was going to say, who didn't do that in the ledgers of their notebook third grade?
Yeah. Or when they're driving their car, they're like, whee! You know.
Yeah, that's why you could do it, because that's how it started. That was the inspiration.
Yeah.
And you know, what's interesting, too, is also when you look at this, you look around E3 now, and everyone complains about sequels and movies, but, I mean, if you look at the games industry, it's just nothing but sequels, right?
Yep.
It's nothing but existing properties. It's just so much investment, so much time to go into it. They have to be able to do that in order to justify the costs. But you look at old school stuff where, like, you know, like there was the hidden level in Quake, right? Where it's like you could see, you could see like a picture of Romero's Lamborghini or Ferrari, and he hit a, like a little sprite of that. And you don't have that anymore because back then you're talking about development teams that are very small comparatively, which is why at E3, the things that excite me the most, it's not Fallout, it's not the new, like, you know, whatever, sequel to the franchise, it's anything coming out on the indie game side is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And so, like, this year, there's a lot of cool stuff that I saw. Like, you know, I think Firewatch featuring, like, a dude from Mad Men.
I know that game's indie.
Yeah.
And I've seen the developers talk about it. They talk about game development, like, with that game, like, it's the easiest thing in the world. Like, yeah, you know, it's just make it again. There's guys who are ripping their hair out because they can't make a spaceship fly straight. And they're creating this world where it's like,
yeah,
the conversations change based on your, like, your reaction. Like, it's like this deep, different branching story, and they got Ollie Moss to do the art, and they're just
Ollie Moss, some
games are easy. It's like, who are you? How'd you do this?
They're just playing it in easy mode, man.
Ah, yeah.
The thing about Firewatch, though, is that does a survival game, I feel like the aesthetic, the visual aesthetic, takes away from the stakes. Like,
I could see that, and I'd be curious to see where they take that, because, you know, games is a sort of art form, which is very much that visual side thing links it so well. So I got to take, like, Gone Home, for example, and a lot of people look at Gone Home and they're like, why was this a survival horror aesthetic from the beginning? And I'm like,
and
I would say, well, that's about setting up your expectation for something bad or something awful. And the turn at the very end, the way the game ends, is about subverting what you're expecting coming into it. And then that's a case where environment and art design is very much tied into experience and the story it's trying to tell.
Myst was really similar to that, too. You felt like you were in danger in that game at random points when you were just like, oh, no, I'm just going to turn over here and be all right.
Well, it's like atmosphere and things like that and all that side of things. You know, I don't remember the name of it, but there's another indie game where it's a slow-mo first-person shooter, like, bullet game where
Super hot.
So you have a game like that, which strips away a lot of aesthetics, and it's about sort of more on core gameplay side of things. You know,
have you ever played Heavy Bullets?
Heavy Bullets? Is that the one where, is it the procedurally generated?
You have six bullets, and when you you have to go get your bullets and get them back. So it's an indie game. I got it on Steam, and it's a lot of fun. Well, guys, unfortunately, we are out of time. First of all, how can we find you? For those of us who are interested in your work, I'm sure a lot of people out here are, and for some reason they wouldn't know where to find you, where can they find you?
You find our stuff, youtube.com/rocketjump, rocketjump2, number 2. And also, if you're interested in filmmaking, RJ Film School. It's a full course load of stuff, and learn how to make movies sort of the way that we've done it.
Absolutely free film school online.
They just finished also shooting their new show for Hulu.
Yeah, so we're done with that. That's coming out later this year, probably around November, summer, something like that. It'll be shorts on our channel, youtube.com/rocketjump, as well as on Hulu.
All right, guys, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us, bro.
Yeah,
thanks
Rocket Jump,
guys.
Everybody. Thanks for getting on, guys.